And we're shoveling with a cup of coffee, that is. This is the growing season right here on News Talk, Saga 960 AM. I'm Matt, the producer, a.k.a. Matt the McFarland. And as always, I am pleased to be joined by my father, Jack, who is in the co-pilot's chair. Dad, how are you?
I am doing very well, Matthew.
Got the coffee going. It's
yeah,
great,
it's not bad.
It?
You do make a strong cup of coffee.
Strong, but fantastic, though.
It's kind of on the strong side.
Yeah.
I don't know what it's going to do to me later. Maybe it makes me on the wired side. We shall find
out. 56-minute show in 22 minutes.
20 minutes.
I love it. I love it. I love it. We had a chance to go down to Landscape Ontario Congress last week. It was fantastic, as usual. The thing that I notice about coming out of there is it smells like... You ever walk by the florists in the grocery store?
I thought it was more like manure.
All right. Well, that would be the winter fair, but okay. It smells floriferous.
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Anyway, regardless, on this week's show, we got the typical horticultural hilarity. Turning you on to gardening is what we do here on The Growing Season. What we're going to be doing is we're going to be talking about respecting your elders, not talking nice to your grandparents, but more of respecting the large trees and the plants that have been around for hundreds, if not thousands, even more years, and making sure that we bow down. Respect, right?
And know how to take care of the old ones.
That's the right thing. Exactly.
I know all about that, Matt.
That's the truth. And then the second thing is, what are the plants doing in the winter? What the heck are these plants doing in the winter?
They're having a major sleep fast.
Yeah, but there's actually a lot more going on than you'd think, right? Because most of the people, everything's shut down. But that's not entirely the case.
No, it's not at all.
All that and much more on this episode of The Growing Season. Lock it in right here on News Talk, Saga 960 AM. Thanks for joining us. Back off commercial break. This is The Growing Season right here on News Talks, like a 960 AM. We're going to be talking about respecting your elders. And as I made mention off the top, that has nothing to do with the elderly, but maybe a little bit when it's coming to plants that are of age, not of age to marry or of age to bear children, but just of a significant age. Trees in the hundreds and thousands of years old, plants that are still around from, say, prehistoric era. How do we take care of these plants? What measures can we be doing to ensuring their continued life? But, Dad, you had something to ask me right off the hop here.
Okay, Matthew. How long ago did dinosaurs die out?
Well, I mean, I've seen Jurassic Park, and the motto, the tagline was something like, an adventure 65 million years in the making. So I would say 65 million years.
Okay, and what was biting the dinosaurs' backs?
I know all about this. Again, Jurassic Park. Many thanks to Mr. Steven Spielberg and Michael Crichton for this film and the book. The book was actually better than the film. Mosquitoes.
Okay.
Yep.
Here's the thing. Okay, insects and plants hung out around 480 million years ago. Got that?
Wait a minute. Insects and plants hung out? What do you mean by hung out?
Well, they first arrived on Earth. How's that?
Okay. How many?
480 million years ago.
Half a billion years ago, insects and mosquitoes.
No, I didn't say mosquitoes. I said insects.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Then along came the wasps, say 240 million years ago.
Wasps?
Yep. Wasps first.
Really?
And then your honeybees showed up around 130 million years ago.
These are the cutest.
No, yeah. Sorry. Bumblebees.
Okay, why do you think that was, Matthew?
Well, this feels like evolution. Oh, no. No, because you're dealing with flowers.
That's right.
Flowering plants. When you have the flowering plants, you need the pollinators, a.k.a. honeybees.
Yeah, up to that point, there wasn't a lot of flowering plants around,
what?
And they showed up around 130 million years ago.
Really?
Here's the thing, okay? Birds showed up in the neighborhood of 60 million years ago.
All right.
And you said, like you said, off
now, wait
the top,
a second,
wait
though.
A minute, I'm not finished. Dinosaurs died out, like you said, roughly 65 million years ago. Here's the catch. Mosquitoes, like Aedes aegypti, okay? And you're going to say, oh, whoa, that's a big name, or vexins.
And what do I got to do now?
Here you go. You're going to have to throw up a Latin alert.
And we should just, I'm going to throw it up now, and then I'll shut it off, because apparently you've told me that we are Latined to death on
today,
this
today, very heavy.
Okay.
Okay. Anyways, these little mosquitoes showed up around 46 million years ago. So how the heck in Jurassic Park were they biting these dinosaurs on their backs? Yeah, and there was evidence in Montana, and they found them in rock, and they actually still had, like, they found that they had iron in their systems, which...
Okay, Okay, hold on a second. Okay, because we're now, like, it's a Monday morning and we're throwing around numbers and people are in the office going, what are these idiots talking about? What you're saying here is effectively the mosquitoes, according to archaeology, the mosquitoes could not have bitten the dinosaurs on their backs.
Because they didn't exist for another 19 or 20 million years. So how the heck are they biting any dinosaurs?
Look, is your whole purpose to ruin Jurassic Park for me here?
Actually, it kind of ruined it for me as well. Sorry about that, Matt.
Now, but I'm saying Michael Crichton, the author of this book, this guy is a smart man. There must be some plausibility going on here.
This is as of 2018, so it's fairly recent. And yes, they found evidence in Montana. Sorry,
you've literally
sorry
crushed
Crichton
my soul
on that one. You were wrong.
You've crushed my soul.
You've crushed me as well.
Okay.
So anyway,
what does this have to do with respecting your elders?
Well, in a way, it does. So 470 million years ago, mosses and lichens came along, and they were responsible for making our trees.
Yes.
That's very important. So back then, it was old sex, spore sex. You got it? I understand old sex, Matthew, because your mom and I are
okay.
going to be married 45 years this year.
Perfect. That's just, yeah.
Okay, so
slow your roll, sir.
So they used something called accidental pollinators. In our case, there was not much accidental pollinating going on. You were born intentionally.
Yeah. Now, you have gone on record to say that I love this. If your underwear was sitting across the room and mom walked by it in the hamper,
She got pregnant.
You said it was completely easy.
She was absolutely unbelievably easy to get pregnant.
So
yes.
If there was a human that was capable of being impregnated via spore, mom would be
your
a candidate.
I know. I'm sorry, Matthew. Sorry, Lenny. I didn't mean to do that to
That's
you.
Funny, man. It was that easy, huh?
It was that easy.
So you guys didn't have to try?
No, not much.
Wow.
And anyways, man, I got you out of it and your sister, Erin, so I'm very happy.
I agree. Well, yeah. And you've done well, specifically with the first model. Second model wasn't much of an improvement, but, you know, whatever. Okay, so mosses and lichens, what was it you said, 400 million or something?
470 million years ago.
Okay, and then they evolved into
what we have today.
Trees.
Yeah, so they basically were giant lichens, you know, up anywhere up to about 90 feet high and, or what is that, anime, 30 meters or something like
33
that? 33 meters. Oh. Okay, so yes, they grew into these trees. They were kind of bizarre looking at the time, but nonetheless, they grew into trees.
Huh. Okay, and then from then, what happens? So after we got this mosses and lichens, and then what happens?
Well, over a period of time, it took a while. It went from, say, I'm trying to think here now, the actual trees showed up somewhere in the neighborhood of 350 to 380 million years ago. Now, these are trees that we would understand.
On a previous show, you said that so the deciduous showed up first, and then the evergreen followed after.
Right. And it was the evergreens were 95 to 153 million years ago.
So the whole purpose of this show is to just chat about the fact that we amongst us have some plant materials that are in the insane level of age, right? In fact, being that we are recording this at a radio station in the Etobicoke area, it behooves us to talk about the oldest tree.
Behoove?
Yeah, that's a good word. Oldest tree in Ontario. Dad?
In Ontario. Would it be a... No, it would be in Toronto, in Ontario. A yellow cedar.
Nope. Close, though. White cedar.
A white cedar. So that would be up in where? In the
Peninsula
or something?
Yeah, it's in the Bruce Peninsula. Apparently, though, this thing started growing 688 A.D. 688 years after the death of Christ. That is a long time ago. Like, we haven't even... It didn't even get into the tacking the thousand on the front of it yet.
No.
That's how old this sucker is. Now, I remember being in Humber College, and we went to, it was some conservation area. Something Falls. Damn. Anyway, and they had these cedars growing out of the side of rock. And these suckers were insanely old, like 300 or 400 years old. And you'd think, oh, it has to be a giant cedar. It wasn't. These cedars were 3-4 feet high. Just tells you the absolute what's the word I'm looking for? The resiliency of these plants to be able to just latch onto a rock or find a little crevice in a rock and burrow their roots in there and then go, okay, I'm going to grow now for 400 years. Craziness.
I know, but the thing is, we should respect them more, Matthew. And if you look out in back in 1980 in BC, I think it's the Sunshine Coast, I believe, and there was a tree there which was a yellow cedar. And so anyways, they were doing clear cutting, and they came along and they cut all the trees down, and they found out that this yellow cedar was over 1,800 years old. No respect there going on.
No. No, and that's this dovetails nicely into one of our previous shows on should we burn wood. And when you start hearing stuff like this, and you hear that the timber industry is basically chopping these things down simply for
wood
and for greed.
Yeah, they make houses and so forth.
It's a little frightening, man.
So cut down the stuff that isn't all that important, you know?
Right.
Cut down some of these trees that are specifically grown for that purpose.
Right. I agree. There should be some. Now, you and Mom spent some time in California, and you guys visited the ancient redwoods. And you said at the time that there is a protected element. Like there's a conservation authority, they're in a park, and you said that there is no logging of any sort going around, and they are literally treated like elders, like elder statespeople.
Well, they're important. And, you know, like we went to the Muir Gardens. And the Sequoia sempervirens. There's a big word.
Yeah, thank God for that Latin.
But sure.
Now, the word Sequoia, people know that. Because Sequoia, that's almost become an English word. Like, we would recognize that tree as a Sequoia. And yes, it's in Latin, but name has become so synonymous with that tree.
Well, a lot of people call their plants or trees by their Latin name that they don't even realize.
Yeah, Dahlia.
So anyways, there was this guy, an environmentalist. His name was Muir. And he was absolutely fantastic. He went around and he specifically saved various groups of trees. And these trees that I saw this past summer were 777 years old. So they've been around a while. And they were all redwoods or sequoias, whatever you want to call them. But there's ones out there that are a lot older. Okay, like for instance, there's one in I'm not sure if it's in the Sequoia Park. What is it? Sequoia National Park? What is that called?
In California. I'd have to look it up.
I'd have to look it up as well.
Yeah.
And it was called General Sherman. Now get this, Matthew. It was 2.7 million pounds. And anime, I think I got this right, 1.225 million kilos. It was 275 feet high or 140 meters. It was 100 feet around at the base. Get that, Matt. 100 feet around at the base. That's 30.48 meters or something.
Okay.
So, Matthew, do you know how to calculate the weight of a tree by any chance?
No, I'm assuming that there's charts or some manner of thing out there that would allow you to do this.
Sure. And again, listeners, we might have to insert a NyQuil moment going on here.
Yeah. I'll drop some snores in there.
Have to. But the volume of a tree is expressed in the same units as the density of a tree. That's kind of important. And you must always calculate the weight of a tree when it has no leaves or no needles. That's important, Matthew.
Okay.
And in the end, you multiply the volume of the tree by the density of the wood. You're going to say, what the hell are you talking about, Dad?
I'm done. I'm lost.
Well, because what the end is, Matthew, is every tree has a certain density and a certain volume. So they have charts for everything. So you can go to a chart and you can check out the density or the volume and it'll tell you everything. And what's really cool about these redwoods is they have a bark that's between 14 and 18 inches thick. But yeah, I know. So very thick bark as far as most trees go.
Okay.
And if you look at something, let's take an oak. An oak is roughly 50 tons. So you look at that and you say, whoa, an oak is around 50 tons. But here's a really cool one. Evergreens are only in the neighborhood of about 3 to 4 tons. So if you take this old tree that we were talking about in the show, 2.7 million pounds. That's one big mother tree, isn't it?
Wow. Now, as far as the root system on those things, didn't you say that there was not much of a root system on those things, on the sequoias? It wasn't super rooty?
Deep, very deep.
But not a lot of spread?
No. For the size of the tree, there's not a lot of what we'd call root system. A lot of these trees, like oaks and maples and so forth, they have a very large root system, generally out to the canopy edge, as you would know, the drip line. So of a tree. So here's another thing, Matthew. Some of the oldest trees out there are things like Bristol cone pine.
Yes.
Any idea what that is?
It's a Bristol cone pine.
That's pretty close.
Yep.
And guess what it has on it?
I would say cones.
You're very good.
And pines, needles. Yeah.
You've got it. So there's one out there called Methuselah.
Okay. So what you're saying here is this, is when a tree or a plant gets to a certain age, they literally name. It's almost been knighted.
I think it's respect. Yeah. Again, I think it's total respect.
So there's a Bristol cone pine out there named Methuselah.
Okay. Yeah, and it's 4,845 years old.
They couldn't have come up with a better name than Methuselah. There's nothing else out there. You got to give the stupid thing Methuselah.
I know the person there at the time, I guess, saw it and said, that looks like a Methuselah. Or I can't even say that properly. But yeah, I know, Matthew.
That's ridiculous.
So yeah, so in the end, I think it's good that they do respect these things.
I think it's great. My only concern is that, you know, when it comes to respect, that's all fine and well, but the dollar is king. At some point, someone's coming along and going, listen, man, I don't care how old the thing is. I'm cutting it down.
I got one for you.
All right.
Back in 1965 in California, there was this guy named Donald Curry. And he came along and he saw this Bristol cone and he cut it down. So when he cut it down, he found out it was 5,000 years old.
Now,
do you know why he cut it down?
Furniture.
Curious. He was curious.
Get the hell out of here.
Curious.
What year was this?
1965. No outcries. Nobody cared.
That guy can go straight
all.
To hell.
He can.
And that's awful.
I know. He was curious. He wanted to find out a few things about it. So
what
he
a bastard.
Cut the tree down.
Wow.
So anyway, wait. Okay.
Proceed.
Right now what's happening, there's a Quercus rubrum.
Okay. Slow down.
A red oak in the North York area, and it's a beautiful tree. So anyways, it's protected. So there was a house on the property. Now it's been made into a parkette. So Toronto, thank you very much.
You ever seen some of those cemeteries in Toronto? Some of those really old ones?
Mount Pleasant.
Yeah. I've been. Have you been?
Yes.
Did they take you down when you were in Humber?
Yes.
Okay, so they took us down too. And there's, isn't it like 75% of the trees on that site are protected?
Not just that, most of them don't even exist in most parts of Canada.
Yeah, it's like it's a cemetery as well as this arboretum. Like there's things on there that you don't see anywhere else. That's where, I believe, isn't a member of the Eaton family, isn't his grave there?
Yes.
It was a cool trip. There was a lot of cool stuff. What the heck was the falls thing? Damn it. Hammond's Falls or something like that, where we saw these ancient cedars. While we're on the topic of Quercus rubrum, when you were planting...
Matthew, you just said Latin.
I know, but you already said it. And we threw the blanket Latin alert up because God.
We can't do this without it.
Not today. One of the most reliable trees to plant on a customer's property, I would say. Right? Quercus rubrum?
Yeah, it's very slow growing and it lives a long time.
That's the only drawback with that. Because for me...
I like the fall color.
And for me, that's where... The oak has a bit of a drawback because it does so much cool stuff. The bark is really cool looking. On the Quercus rubrum, it comes out green, but it gets this like explosion red. The leaves are unique. It also makes the classic acorns. The only problem with the sucker is it's slow growing. Like you literally have, what did Keith Lowry from Chance at Acres say? The average fir or the average evergreen grows between 8 to 12 inches a year. I'm not sure what that would be on a deciduous tree, but man, the oak's got to be like 3 inches. It literally grows
very slowly.
Nothing, right? As far as deciduous trees on customers' properties, what would you have been planting the most?
I hate to tell you this, Matthew. Back then, it was Norway maple.
Oh, my God.
It was a brutal... And Austrian pine.
Oh, my God.
Again, they are almost not even used anymore because they are so heavy maintenance items.
Listeners, if you want to put the cheapest, crappiest deciduous tree on your property, go with Norway maple. They're a weed. We consider them a weed now. They are awful. Now, they grow like stink. They grow crazy fast, but they're super weak as far as the bark composition and the wood composition. And they don't really, they get what?
This Tiplodia kind of on the stupid Austrian pine. Oh, they drive you nuts. And you notice that black spot on the leaves in the fall and, you know, yeah. In the fall. They don't even have a great fall color.
Oh, it's just a useless, useless tree. Useless.
Absolutely. I would never do it anymore.
No. But Austrian pine are great for like golf courses, for windscreens or whatever. But they're just a junky tree.
They die off so bad now. They're horrible. I would never.
And they only have, like, it's funny how many times customers would ask us, do trees have a lifespan? And some do, some don't. Austrian pines, about 20 years, and they are garbage.
No, but they can live up to 45 to 50 years.
But when you start getting into the 20-year range.
On the major ugly side. And they're messy. They're messy.
Yeah.
So here's the thing, Matthew. There's a, we were talking the old ones, okay?
Yeah.
So there's a apple tree. That's down in Vancouver, Washington. It dates back to 1826. It is the matriarch to all of the apple trees that are growing in the area. Can you imagine?
Holy, wait a minute. So they've pulled all the cuttings and everything off of this single tree?
One tree. And it dates back to 1826.
And that's got to be protected.
It's very protected.
Yeah, it's got to be. Armed guards, or they bring in the, you know, those guards at the front of Buckingham Palace with the funny hats?
Sure. So, you know, you're looking
those
at,
guys.
You know, various things like that. And certain trees like the banyan tree, for instance, we were talking a little bit on the roots earlier.
Yep.
Well, banyans and so forth, I think in Calcutta, I believe. And those roots will go out 400 feet or so. Why is that, Matthew?
Well, searching for water.
Okay. And
for
it's
sure.
not just searching for water, but it's survival.
And it's also probably has to do with, is the soil there particularly, like, is there a large rock bed underneath? So therefore they can't go super deep.
I think that's the issue. I think it's just that it dries out very quickly. So it needs a lot of roots. And you got to understand, these things cover acres.
But if it dries out quickly, wouldn't you think it would want to go deeper? Because if it's closer to the surface is hot and it dries out quicker.
But if the water is not down deeper, they have to get it from, say, things like rain and so forth.
But you're not getting water there really, right?
Well, no. So you have to take all that in consideration. But here's an interesting thing, Matthew. What is one of the main things that kills these old trees? Any idea?
Oh, I got to say, because they've adapted for water, I bet you improper care or improper maintenance or something.
Fantastic.
Yeah, because they would have adapted for water. Water was the first thing that popped up, but at being this age, they would have at some point adapted for water and said, no, we're fine for water. It just means go down deep. That's all it means, right? Or spread out.
Well, the taproot holds the tree in place and then all the fibrous roots
right.
and so forth keep the tree alive.
Right.
But here's another thing. Environmental stressors. You know what I mean by that, Matthew?
Well, anything to do with, well, with climate change happening, you're talking about wind patterns have been changing.
Fantastic.
Right? You're dealing with whether it be hotter or colder, or more or less snow, right? So because of climate change, you're dealing with the change in environment for these trees, and they either have to adapt or they die off. Think about how many large trees you would see with branches being ripped off, and you're 66 years old. Are you seeing more tree damage and wind damage now
ice
than you
damage.
Did? And ice damage than you did, say, 40 years ago?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But you're also looking at things like drought, disease, insects. Root damage. Here's a biggie. Root damage. Us landscapers, or anybody who has a home.
We're terrible.
And they extend their driveway, or they put a patio in, or a pool, and they keep coming across.
Hey man, how many times did you put a shovel in the ground?
And found the roots. And these roots are keeping these old ones alive. So you got to be careful with it. So, you know, a tree can actually be standing there and be covered in leaves, and it can actually be in the throes of death, and you would think it's completely healthy. But it's not. So that's a time to call in your arborist and that and have a look and see what's going on with your old ones. If you have a very old tree on your property, respect it. Take care of it because it'll take care of you. It supplies you with oxygen. It supplies you by it helps you out by cooling down your home. So respect the old ones.
Now here's, and you have been in the business longer than I have. You would have seen a customer or customers with sites that had majorly mature trees, right?
Lots of them.
Okay. Of those customers that had sites that had majorly mature trees, How many of those customers, over the course of your interactions with them, would have called in an arborist just for simple doctor, just having a doctor on site looking at these trees? How many would have called in an arborist for their large mature trees? My guess is next to freaking none.
5%.
Yeah.
I would say no more than that.
Right.
And then, it's disgusting, Matthew. If the tree is suffering, help it out.
Well, but and then what happens is, especially if you have a tree of that size, if you've got a tree that's in the 100-foot tall range and you're not maintaining it, the next step is a branch falling on your roof and destroying
your
house. Or
on your automobile.
Right.
And that's nothing. What about on your pets or on your children?
Right.
You don't want anybody getting injured. And so if there's something called the standing dead. So yeah. If you have trees in the wintertime and you get
ice. Which is a sequel to The Walking Dead?
No.
No?
But if you have ice damage or so forth, Matthew, and the trees' branches break and they're still hung up there, and they can come down in a windstorm and you can get injured. So
number
take
one,
care of them.
Number one thing that a client can do when walking around their site, if they have large mature trees to help with health, etc. Is there a number one thing?
Water it. Or if it needs...
That
if
makes
it looks,
sense.
Sure. And if it looks a little bit chloretic to your evergreens, for instance, then fertilize it. You know those tree spikes, Matthew, or those... what do they call them? The ones where they insert pipes into the ground.
Yeah, they put the... It's like the they puncture the ground or whatever. It's a probe. They put the probe fertilizer.
Water probe.
All right. Well, there it is. Respect your elders. Again, proper maintenance. Just take a walk around your property. Look at these trees. If you see something, maybe call an arborist in. All that and much more is what we've talked about right here on The Growing Season on News Talk Saga 960 AM. On the other side, what the heck are the plants doing in the winter? He's Jack. I'm Matt. Lock us in. This is The Growing Season right here on News Talk Saga 960 AM. We're back. Thanks for joining us, Dad. This is the first show in a long time that I can remember where there isn't a guest.
I'm a guest.
Well, no. If you happen to be, you would be a homeowner, as would I. We own this place. We're not guests in our own home.
No, but this guest or whoever you want to call me is on the tired side.
I got to tell you, though, there's something about you and I just sitting around and chatting without the guest. What I don't want to have happen is have the guest be a crutch. Even on Drinks on Us right here on News Talk Saga 960 AM, Sundays 10 into noon, some weeks we just don't have a guest and it's just chatting. That for me is what I like about talk radio. I love the fact that as an audience member, you have the opportunity to listen in on a window, or it's a window into a conversation between two people or more than two people. But in your case and my case, the number one comment that we get from listeners is that it's like walking into a living room and hearing a dad and a son just chat about plants and stuff.
So what do you do if the guest doesn't really give you much or doesn't
speak
much?
I have that. I have that. And this is one of the things that you don't learn. And I never went to broadcast school. I went to the Barry Davis School of Broadcasting.
Neither did I, for crying out loud.
That's the truth, right? So I started doing broadcasting with Barry Davis, host of The Spin on News Talk Saga 960 AM. Weekdays, he's a drive time show, 4 to 6 p.m., with his lovely and talented co-host, Michelle Storino. And about 4 years ago, I jumped into this thing with called Out of the Park. It's a sports podcast. We cover the Blue Jays. We get many of the players on. We cover the Leafs as well. And I never had any broadcast experience. So one of the reasons why I wanted to get involved in live radio was because with the podcast side of things is that you can just hit stop. So let's say if we're going to record a guest at our own home studio, because The Growing Season has an HQ, its own home studio, because sometimes we can't get the guests on live right here on the radio.
We have to get them when they're getting them.
Yeah, so we'll get them at home. It's great because you can hit stop. But the thing that I wanted to make sure that I learned was about live radio, where you can't hit stop. And sometimes, like on the podcast side of things, if you and I are recording with the guest and this guest is not giving us much, which we haven't really had a lot of.
No, not too much.
Not too much. Where we can just, okay, yeah, that was great. You can cut the thing short and then we can fill the gaps in. Man, it's tough on live radio if this guest is not giving you. And we've had some guests on Drinks on Us, especially, where you're like, oh my goodness, and you're watching the clock. You're looking at it going, holy, what are we going to do with this?
So what do you do when dad doesn't have much to say?
I don't think that's happened. We've been doing this since, like, September. Listen, you...
I'm on the long-winded side.
Yeah, but you've been wonderful in that, firstly, as a former contractor, you have the ability to get a person comfortable talking to you exceedingly quick, as well as all of our listeners have said, man, you can tell that Jack really enjoys the subject material.
Oh, I love it.
Because, like... We just talked on the previous segment for like 26 minutes about old trees and old plants. And
I hope I didn't bore anybody.
No, but we could have gone another 20 minutes, right?
Sure.
And the amount of prep, too, that you do is wonderful. But in a lot of cases, I would imagine that you don't really need as much prep as you're doing because you're a very knowledgeable dude, as well as you like this subject.
I love it.
Yeah.
And my thing is I want the information to be accurate.
When's the last time we had a dam? I think I screwed up.
We're going to have to reinstate the dams.
Yeah, but I think I screwed up back there. I said a meter was – no, a third of a meter was 30.
No, 39 inches is a meter.
No, I screwed
36
that up.
Is a yard, right?
I screwed that up.
You're worse than I am. I thought you were a math person.
I am. Hey, man.
We're going to have to get you on.
Listen, I got a lot of balls in the air, including the two between my legs, but I got a lot of balls in the air here, okay? I'm
operating. I don't want to hear about that.
Computers,
man.
And soundboards are going on here. There's phones ringing.
Earphones.
Yeah, okay. So just, you got to give me a little bit here.
So you got a computer. What does Dad have, Matthew?
A brain. I know.
You're just
better than I am. Okay, you're just better than I am.
No, my brain is so numb right now. I can't keep track of all this information. But anyways.
So what are we
talking about, Matthew?
All right, so look, here's the thing. Now I'm saying here's the thing. You're freaking passing it on. So our listeners, we're constantly keeping track of crutch words. One of the things that you got to do, this seems like a lesson in broadcasting, is eliminate the crutch words. And what a crutch word is, essentially, is if it's a word that you are using over and over improperly, words like, I mean. So my dad is...
Here's the thing, right? That's
another one. Here's the thing is the brand new one. But the problem is, I say to my dad all the time, I'm just too close to the damn flame because I don't have a whole lot of crutch words. And being around this guy across from me, it's like getting a sexually transmitted disease, man.
Not for me, Matthew.
No. But just now he's passing off, here's the thing, right? It's awful. It's like, get away from me, man. We should almost record in two separate rooms.
Listeners should see how many crutch words they have.
You know what? Absolutely. It's a fun game to play because one of the things that I really had to work on is you speak in everyday life just like you speak on the radio. Therefore, you're always practicing. Well, man, I didn't start doing this till I was, let's say, 38 years old. You know how many times I've said and you know and like and right?
You say a lot more rights lately.
In just regular everyday life, yeah. One of the things that I have with drum students, talking to a teenager is hilarious because everything is like, you know, like it was like Christmas and I was like, and you're like, man, I'm thinking.
Or A's a big one, right?
A's a big one.
Yeah. I said right, didn't I?
I didn't hear it.
Okay. It didn't exist. It slipped in there.
Yeah, whatever. But the point is, this is hard. This broadcasting thing is hard. It's hard.
And you have to have a discussion about information that, on the whole, is pretty extremely scientific.
And our listenership will know, people that have regularly tuning in to The Growing Season right here on News Talk, Saga 960 AM. Also, too, if you're following along, visit us at growingseasoncanada.com. Notice that I haven't been talking about property consults right now because people aren't really doing that right now. But coming in the spring, I'll toss that up again.
Oh, man, that's going to be busy.
Busy. Click on show bits. There'll be a blog accompanying today's show. And holy hell, I'm going to have to do – it's like 2 hours to get the show bits thing up and going with this stupid thing.
I know. I'm sorry on that, Matthew.
No problem. Anyway, so the point is that there's a crutch word right there. Trying to speak how you're supposed to speak on the radio all day long, it's exhausting.
And to eliminate all these things that you've been doing all your life.
Right. Like, and for you...
You just said right again, Matthew.
No, but that was a proper right.
Okay. Anyways, Matthew, can we please get to the subject matter?
That's okay. This is what talk radio is about.
I understand, but please.
All right. So we have customers would be not really super interested in their properties horticulturally in the winter. It was more about survival, right? Don't slip and die on the ice on your driveway. and my gardens are covered in snow.
Which we're hoping they're covered in snow.
That's a good thing. But there's a whole lot of stuff that's happening with these plants in the winter that many of us, including myself, I didn't know about. There's a whole lot of things going on that maybe would be wonderful information to know and also give you a little bit more respect for your plant material when you're just heaving shovelfuls of snow on top of it that are probably covered in salt as well. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
Yeah.
Here's the thing, Matthew. Before we... Here's what I would love to talk about initially. How's
ooh,
that?
That's a long one. We got to figure something else out, but okay.
Okay. Before we move outside, didn't we do a show previously on indoor plants?
Health plants.
Very good.
Health plants.
Amazing. Health plants.
With a hard lisp.
Sounds like you got a lisp.
Thanks to Kimberly O'Brien for joining us on that show, by the way.
She was fantastic.
Yep, she was.
So anyways, before we move outdoors, what are your plants doing indoors?
This is providing that you have indoor plants.
Sure. Not these just pictures up on the wall, but actually physical plants in pots. What are they doing?
Well, there's photosynthesis happening, which means they are producing the pigment, the chemical, the chlorophyll that's keeping their leaves green. They're also producing oxygen for the interior of your home.
Okay, here's the thing, Matt. Oh, I just said it again. Okay, anyways, your indoor plants are actually, from the fall and generally over the winter, are dormant. They really don't want a lot of things done to them.
What?
Yes, I know, Matthew. All these people who go to great lengths to do
all
this.
So there's a cycle there as well?
They don't know they're indoors. So that's the thing. So the idea is, Matthew, that from fall over the winter, these plants are basically dormant. As long as they don't have flowers, that changes the whole criteria, okay? So here's what happens. Generally speaking, you water them enough, but not too much. You know, just feel the soil. It should be moist at a touch, but don't overwater. That's the number one thing that kills off your houseplants. And then again, on top of that, don't over-fertilize. They don't need it. And you mentioned photosynthesis, but they're not doing much of that either. Because they don't want to produce any sort of new leaves or anything, so they won't do much of that over the winter.
Okay, so here's a question for you then. Would you recommend a completely different care routine in the fall and winter months for your indoor plants versus the care routine that you would get going for the spring and summer? And if so, when do you begin to ramp up into the spring care routine? So first question, would you recommend a different care routine for your indoor tropical plants in the fall and winter months?
Sure. You were talking about ramping up. I would say somewhere in the March area, when you would start changing everything out.
Basically,
again,
with the change of the season coming,
follow
then you begin
the season like the season.
Right.
And so the indoor plants during the winter, they don't want a lot of care. Like I said, they don't need much food or water. But you have to clean the leaves, okay? That's the one thing. And they're still doing this oxygen out and oxygen during the day and CO2 at night.
But you're not supposed to touch the plants, you're saying.
Agree.
You said in the past.
But in the winter, you have to make sure the leaves are clean or the stems are clean.
Why?
Because everything is slower and they seem to be more aware of it. I don't know. I'm not out there talking to the plant. Like, people love talking to their plants.
And we've learned that the only thing that does basically is you are expelling carbon dioxide.
And it makes them grow quicker because it's like candy, okay?
Right. So but the plant's not responding to your voice. Plant is responding to the carbon dioxide.
To the carbon dioxide you're breathing out. So again, put them on in full sun, at least as much sunlight as you can. But again, don't do too much care to them. And they're very easy to take care of over the winter unless they're flowering. If they're flowering, if they're a type of plant that is flowering, then you use a fertilizer like 131 NPK. Again, you must have heard in one of our previous shows.
Yeah.
So the idea is if they're flowering, they need this extra little bit of a kick for the flowers. But anyways, Matthew, enough on the indoor stuff. Let's get to
okay, but hold on a second,
okay,
though.
What do you want to do?
So would you recommend that – are the houseplants drier in the winter and fall than they would be in spring and summer? Would you recommend a slightly drier? Like, what you're saying is you're basically trying to simulate what's happening outside, right? So there's not nearly as much watering happening in the fall and the winter, specifically the winter, as there would be in the spring and summer. Are you trying to simulate that for your houseplants indoors?
Sure. And the thing is, there's not as many leaves. So they're not forming new leaves.
right.
basically in those in that dormancy period. So for your fall and winter, they're not producing as many leaves, so they don't require as much fertilizer and as much water.
So less water in the winter.
Less water, less fertilizer. And again, keep them away from drafts and keep them away from these vents.
Yeah.
So you got to respect them. And they're going to help you out immensely. Like I told you in a previous show, one 8-inch potted plant is good for about between 100 and 129 yeah. square feet. Mm-hmm. So they really do help you out a lot. So take care of them. And I mean, it's better than a dog or a cat because you don't have to walk them.
No, and if you want to go away on vacation for a week, they're going to
they
be fine.
They can tolerate it without any sort of problems for at least a week. So you don't have
they
to
They also
bring
won't
people
interact
in.
With you like a dog or a cat.
No.
No, they just kind of sit there.
Well, they sit there.
It's more like a cat.
Anyways, Matthew, can we please get to the outdoors where people probably want to know what's going on?
What's going on?
Okay, so how do you want to start? How do you want to start this? From the ground up?
Okay, so let's start off with some lawns. Go.
Okay, when it comes to a lawn, the most important thing is you must keep the crown alive and the roots alive. So what is a crown? Where is it located?
Well, normally on the head of a human.
But not on lawns.
No, actually, the crown of a blade of grass is in its ass.
It's in its ass.
Its butt. Or basically the base of where the blade of grass touches the soil line or the thatch line.
Otherwise, you'd be cutting off the crown all the time.
Right. And it's a wonderful defense mechanism.
Adaptation, yes.
Right. So you have to keep the crown alive. Basically, anything from surface grade or the base of the blade of grass down into the roots has to stay alive, right?
Right.
How do they do that?
So anyways, in order to stay alive, what they do is they move the water from out of the cells into the spaces in between the cells. Yes, I know this sounds really rather strange, but this is a safety mechanism to keep it alive in the winter.
So hold on a second. They filter the water out of their cells
into
the spaces in between.
In between the cells.
And then what stays in the cells?
There's basically nothing in
the
cells.
It's empty.
It's empty. It protects the cells so they don't get destroyed. You destroy the cells, you destroy the leaf of the blade of grass, whatever you want to call it. So here's an interesting thing, Matthew, is the water in between the cells now acts as an antifreeze. And keeps the roots alive.
Does it have AFP?
Yes, you're right, Matthew. There is AFP involved because perennial ryegrass has AFPs.
Which is antifreeze protein.
Which is a nurse grass, which protects the blue grasses in your lawn.
That's really cool.
It's actually really cool.
So the cells of the blade of grass stay empty. They're arid. They have nothing in there.
Yes.
And the water in between the cells acts like an insulator.
As an antifreeze, yes.
That's incredible.
But what's important is what you did in the fall prior to freeze up. Okay, so you must do things like the height of the grass must be between 1 and 1.5 inches tall.
Okay.
It must water, aerate it well just prior to freeze up. Another thing is fertilizer is important because fertilizer will give the lawn something to feed on in those times where you have freeze-thaw in the spring.
Okay, so the number one way to get your lawn to overwinter well and be looking wonderful in the spring is making sure that in the fall, if it's been a dry fall, soak the snot out of your lawn.
Yes. And another thing, if we had snow cover, that would help, Matthew. That would be excellent.
Really?
So snow cover is an insulator. Snow is a good, and it helps out the crown. Okay?
So the worst possible situation here would have been dry fall, no snow, terrible for the grass.
Yes. Even if we had snow on the ground and we had these January thaw kind of things going on. So what would happen is during a January thaw, you would have all this water laying around, let's say, and the crowns would be exposed. So what happens is during that period, let's say we have a really quick freeze happen.
Right.
So you get desiccation happening. You know what desiccation is, Matt?
Well, I know when it comes to a grave, you have to dig up the grave.
No.
Okay.
No. Actually,
not
what
that
it
I've
does,
done that before, but
it actually whips the water out of the crown and the roots, and then it kills them.
By the way, that's desecration, and I'm sorry about that. That was on me.
Sorry, Matthew.
I should buzz myself for that.
So I don't know if that explains anything to our listeners.
Completely. Let's get on the topic of flowering shrubs.
Okay.
Well,
the number one thing is that, again, the water is moved out of the cells and into the spaces between the cells.
Of the leaves. Well, no.
Not
the
of the leaves,
are off.
Of the tissue.
Okay.
Okay. And wood is an insulator, so that's important.
Yeah.
But on top of that, Zone hardiness comes into play.
For our listeners, all that means is making sure that you are planting shrubs and trees in areas where they will be able to survive winter temperatures.
Excellent, Matthew.
Yeah.
Excellent.
You see that? The young kid knows some stuff.
He knows some stuff. But here's a real important thing. You must make sure that because of zone hardiness, you still want to protect those roots. So bring plants in that are going to survive in your zone. Make sure of that. And here's my one thing I'm really going to bite my lip on is wood mulch around the roots.
I hate wood mulch. I can't stand this.
But in this case, it protects the roots. So do that and your plants will be better for it, Matthew. If it's a really fussy little plant, like one of your Jap maples, for instance, I would have recommended that you burlap it. And that protects against sun scald and wind damage. Which is a biggie.
And there are certain shrubs out there too, like dwarf Alberta spruce.
They're a royal pain.
Yeah.
So here's
prone to wind damage, big time.
And what causes wind damage, Matthew?
Well, that's where you're starting to deal with this antifreeze protein.
Whoa.
Right? Or AFP. We've talked about that on our Evergreen show, where if that's breaking down, that basically the antifreeze protein prevents ice crystals from forming in the needles of the plant, right?
Sure.
And the constant wind hitting the tips of the needles will, it's trying to fight this antifreeze protein. And a plant like the dwarf Alberta spruce seems to get wind damage and browning off on the tips or on the side where the wind's hitting it.
So this antifreeze protein, that's very good, Matthew, by the way.
I have my moments, yes.
You have your moments. Well, this antifreeze protein, like I said, there's a point at which it cannot actually prevent the plant or
the tree. It's got a threshold.
Sure, there's a point. And if it's really, really ice cold, I use a lot of reallys, and if there's a point where it cannot hold back the cold. And that's why you'll get a portion of your shrub, for instance, you said dwarf Alberta, and that's why you'll get this browning on the part of
tips.
A portion of the tree, yeah. Generally on the windward side of the plant.
Yeah.
And so that's why on these really fussy things, use the burlap.
Right. The problem with the burlap, though, too, is that you got to get it off in
March.
Before
it gets toasted. You don't want it to be toasted.
Because then you're microwaving the poor plant.
Sure.
You're going to be killing it.
So anyways, Matthew, let's do trees before we run out of time here.
Yep.
What's a tree, let's say a deciduous tree, what's it doing in the winter?
Well, leaves have dropped. It's basically
why?
Well, because it's that abscission layer.
So whoa!
So for our listeners that haven't heard that before, the abscission layer is just like a gluey substance that holds the leaves onto the branches. And when the leaves drop in the fall, that's a result of the lack of light. The instant the light begins to fade, the plant ceases to create chlorophyll through the process of photosynthesis.
Whoa.
And this abscission layer, which is, again, it's just like think of it like your fingernail sticks to your finger. It's the same way that the leaf is sticking to the branch. This abscission layer begins to dissolve and the leaves drop off. Part of the reason why they do that is they're basically getting down to bare minimum over the winter.
They don't want to hold all these leaves and have to feed them.
They have to feed them. The number one thing is everything slows down. All of this movement throughout the trunk and the wood and everything slows down and they basically go dormant with the exception of the roots. The roots are keeping everything alive and going. But movement of fluids all the way through the trunk and the branches slows down to a complete crawl, almost to none.
And so the actual trees have other things that are in place, like for instance the wood in there and their bark and so forth. And the wood is an insulating thing.
Yep.
So you have to have some movement, at least a minimum amount of movement, because it doesn't really want to practice photosynthesis. There's a big word again.
Well, because there's no leaves anyway. Who cares?
No, there's no leaves to take care of. But the roots go down a long way on a lot of these trees, and they go out a long way, generally out to the drip line of the tree.
What's the drip line?
The drip line is the very outermost portion of where the leaves are.
Just think about the word circumference.
Absolutely.
It's the outer circumference of the tree.
Sure, and that's where basically most roots go. And that's why when people are moving these trees around, they don't realize, let's say you're transplanting a tree, say, from a nursery, they're only moving roughly 5% of the roots.
That's frightening. It's a wonder that any of these poor things survive.
It's amazing that they survive.
Yeah.
But there's all sorts of things that, okay, they can't make food because they don't really want to make food. And everything slows down and growth stops almost 100%. But there has to be a slight bit of movement. So otherwise, the tree will die. And in the forest, you say, well, in the forest, nobody's doing anything. Well, they kind of protect each other.
Yeah, they create this insulation. It's this, right, the more trees that you've got, the less wind at the trunk line and all that type of stuff because everything's packed in tight, right?
Sure. And after all, these trees need a resting phase or a dormant period.
Yeah.
Or they're not going to make it.
And even the evergreen trees that are green all winter, they are slowing down. Everything's slowing down. You're not going to notice significant growth on an evergreen tree over the winter because they're slowing down. It gets down to bare minimum. What is the least that we need to do to survive? Is it a hibernation? Like a bear is not dead when it's hibernating. It's just basically shutting its systems down to complete bare minimum, right? Heart rate goes down to 40 beats a minute or some ridiculous thing. And that's effectively what these horticultural organisms are doing. Just getting down to bare minimum.
Sure, and you were just saying evergreens, but evergreens are kind of cool as well. They, after all, they do carry probably 80% of their needles or their foliage
throughout
the winter,
mm-hmm.
And they have something on their needles which is called cutin. You know what cutin is, Matthew?
It's a waxy substance.
And what's it do?
It's basically think of it like Saran wrap.
Well, that's true, but
right,
it allows to expand and contract according to what the temperatures are.
It's a waxy protective layer against the elements as well.
Sure. And another thing is they have not just the cutin, they have AFPs, Matthew. We're back to AFPs again. What is that
just
exactly?
Antifreeze protein.
Okay.
It prevents the formation of ice crystals within the needle, and that allows this thing to stay evergreen.
Amazing, Matthew.
I listen, dude. Totally. I listen.
So these evergreens
have
what, you know, stems, of course,
mm-hmm.
and they have rhizomes. You know, rhizome is Matthew.
Holy man. Our poor listeners. A rhizome is an underground root system. It's basically how plants spread, certain plants spread by root.
Very good.
Yeah.
So anyways, this particular evergreen doesn't need much energy and nutrients to make needles in cold temperatures because it doesn't, there's no growth going on.
Right. Everything slows down. Hibernation.
Absolutely. 100%, Matthew.
Speaking of hibernation, we're getting towards the end of the show here. This is the growing season right here on News Talk, like 9:60 a.m. Well, that's it, Dad. That was a science heavy one. Holy geez. You know, the number of people that have said to us, because we teed up the Elder Show on the chat that we had with Kimberly O'Brien on her show, and the number of listeners that have said, oh, I'm really interested to hear about the elders stuff.
The old ones, yeah.
Yeah, it's super, super cool. If you're new, if you're a first-timer, the growing season has officially moved to Saturdays at 10 a.m. But you're thinking, wait a second, on the schedule, it says that it's on at Saturdays at 10 a.m. already. You're right. That used to be a replay of our brand new shows, which would occur on Monday. So there's been a bit of a schedule change. Check this out. New shows, brand new broadcasts of the growing season on News Talk Saga 9:60 a.m. occur at Saturdays at 10 a.m. with a replay Sundays at 2 p.m. and a replay again Mondays at 11 a.m. Days haven't changed. Times haven't changed. Just what's changed is that we are now live on the air Saturdays at 10 a.m. Right, Dad?
Yes. This is good.
This is good.
Should be on Saturdays anyway.
I agree. This is exactly where this show needs to be positioned. And what ended up happening was there was a time slot open earlier in the season at Saga 9:60 and they needed to fill it. So they put the growing season there as kind of a bit of an audition to see how she would fare. And it's been super popular. But the proper positioning of this show
should be on the weekend.
On the weekend, right? You're just getting out. You're going to be getting into your garden centers, etc., thinking about getting into the garden. Now, obviously not right now, but we're making prep for spring. And we just got back from Landscape Ontario Congress.
Fantastic.
And it was super productive. We're going to be having a lot of busyness coming in the spring. Follow along with us, growingseasoncanada.com. Click on Show Bits. There'll be a blog to accompany today's show. All of our socials are there. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tracking with us. We super appreciate you shoveling with us on our new time. Again, Saturdays, 10 a.m. Dad?
Respect your elders. That includes me, listeners. Jack out.